It took Octopus 2 years before he turned his eyes up to the surface at night. And, in the ancient crackling language of the cephalopod, he wondered, what is that light? He watched the glowing through the fluttering cape of the sea, these tiny pinholes in the sky that glowed white and winked silently. See them? On clear nights, lights winking down from the sky. He watched them and wondered if they watched him back, a lonely, boneless creature in the deep, watery black. But through the wriggling glass of the ocean's surface, they danced like plankton in the sky, and Octopus found himself wanting more and more to know why. One night, he rose to the surface for a better look, peeped his glistening head out into the emptiness above the blue, and listened. He heard the ragged cries of seabirds squabbling overhead, felt the wind against his tender skin. He watched the winking lights pinned to their places in the sky. Now, under their stare, he thought, what am I? Have you ever thought that sometimes? He took the memory of those lights down into the deep with him, into the endless black. Down here, the ocean lights were hungry beasts, glowing teeth, the souls of beings that had never known the brightness of daylight. But the lights above the ocean were different. They called to Octopus. He heard them. He brought it up with Cuttlefish one day, but she wanted to flutter her frills and play. "You're so droll, Octopus," she said. "This is the ocean. Keep your head down here instead." The remora fish wouldn't leave the shark long enough for Octopus to speak to them. And the clownfish was too busy with his conspiracy theories about the cunning plans of anemones to listen to Octopus reminiscing about lights above the blue. Stingray just said it was like looking out of one ocean and into another. But Octopus thought this through. "This is my ocean," he decided. "I know this one. I want to know the other ocean too." Octopus felt himself changing, felt a whole lot smaller than he had before. And so, this lonely, boneless sea creature hitched up his tentacles and slithered ashore. It took effort, what men called guts, and Octopus clenched his, sidled his way up the beach. The sea muttered indignantly, and Octopus felt heavy. Heavy for the first time. Octopus discovered his weight and thought, "I am heavy. I exist." He suckered his way up the beach, away from the clawing sand, away from the itch of the ocean. He watched his body sidewinder across this place called the land. He examined his own shadow in the suffocating sun, the roundness of himself, the flatness of his stature, the stickiness of his skin, his smallness against nature. And he scurried for shade before the sun could suck him dry. He sat in a rock pool so he wouldn't fry. Up here, the ocean looked alien, crowded, soft and simple. Octopus knew he was a creature from a universe far away, and it was this thought that drew his attention to men. The cephalopods of the land, with 5 tentacles on each hand, who built giant reefs rising out of the sea. And Octopus thought, here are the creatures I wish to be. These clever things will understand me. But our octopus was a creature from the world of the sea, and he was about to find out how cruel the land could be. Octopus watched enough to understand that the language of men is really what they do with their hands, how gentle or violent they are. It occurred to him after this that a hand is nearly the same shape as a star. Octopus began his crusade with a beat. The damp slap of a tentacle on the war drum of a rock. His galaxy-wide eyes peering up at the men in their shock. What did they think of him? He'd listened hard to their language and tried to speak, but all the men heard was the wet click of his beak. Octopus had seen men and the language of the hand, but right at that moment he didn't really understand, and when the men, in their voices of blind thunder, drove him back to the beach, him scuttling like a crab to get out of their reach, he scurried up into the lower branches of a palm tree. "I'm not an octopus anymore," he thought, as the men walked, tall and two-legged, back to the men place. "But the men are nothing like me." He waited for the hand of night. Through his new eyes, the world appeared full of hands, and felt sad under the starlight. He was on the dimensional gate between the world of the sea and the world of the land, and although Octopus did not stand quite as tall as a man, might not have had a spine, he did have a mind. And at that moment, perched in the branches of that tree, higher than he should ever be, he wondered, "What made me?" We've all wondered that sometimes, haven't we? Through eyes that carry the lit teeth of the deep sea, with a mind at odds with what it should be, Octopus examined the sky. Day and night, he saw in it a bright eye. He saw the strings of stars like tentacular arms rippling out behind a giant creature just like him. The sky stirred. It boiled with something coming alive. Octopus said, "If man's gods made him, then my God made me too." Because he thought it, because he believed in the intelligence of his design, the octopus god Cracktacon appeared, a monstrous apparition in the sky. He saw the blinking lights of the stars as its glowing arms. He saw the sun and moon as its wide, unblinking eyes. The world was in the grip now of a great octopus god. Our little octopus, huddled in his tree, suddenly felt not quite as lonely. Octopus knotted his tentacles into a prayer and called on Cracktacon. He wanted answers to his anger, and this, of course, is what gods are for. Sometimes our anger makes others angry. Well, Cracktacon was raging to the edge of the ocean and beyond. I wonder whose anger came first. Cracktacon's red and white eyes rolled in the sky. The stars of his arms flickered like pain. He opened his colossal beak and said, "Have you seen what they are doing to the oceans? Have you seen the oil in the water, the nets creeping down into the deep? They are killing the fish, and they chase you away as if you've no right to feel your own weight." Cracktacon rolled his great bulk in the sky, his brilliance twinkling in his otherworldly eyes. He talked of revenge, of war against men, and because he was a god, Octopus listened. Cracticon wove stories out of the velvet dark, stories of reckonings and revivals, of a revolution waged too late. And our octopus wanted to fight those two-legged destroyers of the ocean. The war began. It was small at first, because he was just one boneless being. But it picked up speed. Once he learned how to sink their ships, how to spoil their crops, how to poison their water, he realized that, to men, his body was a horror, like something that had plummeted from the stars, and yet they recognized in his eyes something almost as human as they were. And he basked in their despair at the things he had taken, the land he'd made toxic, the nets he'd destroyed, the people he'd made hungry in the name of saving the sea. And in the dark, in the whispering nest of his tree, he was still at his most lonely. Octopus stared up into the eye of his god and saw that Cracticon was pleased. Octopus didn't know it, but despite his bonelessness, though his black beak could no more than click and squeak, he was changing. He was changing into the shape of his rage, because anger changes us. Into the shadows of the damage he'd made. Though his skin still sizzled under the high sun, though he still slithered along the sand, the shape of his shadow became more and more like that of a man. And this made him conspicuous. Even with his god churning the sky, it didn't seem to matter how much water he turned to blood, how many ships he destroyed, how often he heard the crack of stone and wood on bone. Octopus was still completely alone. He looked at his reflection in the rippling rock pools, the translucence of his skin, the beating of his pain within. He looked his god in his wide, white eye and demanded to know, why this? Why me? But as is so often the case with gods, Cracticon had no answer. It is what it is, his god said. Accept it. But Octopus couldn't. A question burned in the dark behind his eyes, and it asked simply, why? His pain had eight arms and wore him like a glove, and he could no longer feel the weight of his god in the sky above. Worse. The men began to notice the figures of eight drawn into the dust near their shattered water pipes. They saw the clumsy slither marks in the wet sand and remembered the pitiful creature they had chased away from their land all that time ago. They knew where Octopus was hiding. As Cracticon was turning off the sky, the men, with their tools and their cruel hands, stood solid and proud in the wet sand and began to drive their axes into Octopus's tree. Octopus clung to the trunk, to the closest thing he had to a spine, and looked down into the murder in men's eyes. He recognized that anger, that need to destroy. Men, it turned out, were nothing more than mirrors. We are all more alike than we realize sometimes. They were out now to cut him to bits. Desperate, he turned again to the sky, to Cracticon's blinking nighttime eye. Please, he begged. Haven't I done as you've asked? Haven't I splintered their ships, destroyed their towers, poisoned their water, thrown fish back into the sea? You are my god. Save me. But of course, Cracticon had only the power that Octopus had given him, and Octopus was becoming thin. In the true fashion of these gods, Cracticon closed his dark eye. "You failed," he said. "I don't care if you die." Octopus suddenly remembered his own birth. Deep in an ocean cave in the gut of the earth. Imagine back nearly 3 years to that deep cave where he was born. Opening the womb of his egg with a soft, pale beak to find thousands of brothers and sisters filling the sea. At the bottom of the cave had been a body, vaster than any he'd yet seen. The corpse of his mother. Remember her? Until now, he had not understood that his mother had given her life so that her babies might have something to eat. He had not understood what love could mean, that he had been his mother's single genetic dream. His god, it turned out, was nothing. Octopus felt his tree shudder under the blows of the axe, watched his god in its rolling tantrum in the sky, the way Cracticon turned his back and closed his colossal eyes. Octopus thought bitterly that gods were a waste of time. With the next tremble of the tree, Octopus leapt from its branches, landed with a wet smack on the face of a man, bit his nose for good measure, fell to the sand, and ran. It was a painful, desperate slither towards his wet, dark world. He fled, followed by the anger of men. And the ocean, like the dying arms of his mother, held his weak body and drew him in. He let go of his weight and his hate and his god. He let the fingers of the current hold his 8 boneless arms and remind him what the ocean was like. The men's anger faded into a watery dream. The ocean was unchanged. He had come home. But Octopus had felt his weight now, had been at war, let down by a god, understood how to believe. And though Octopus had adopted atheism and returned to the arms of the sea, the men were still up there. The shadows of their ships lurked overhead, scattering sharks, searching for Octopus. That kind of anger never leaves us. They still wanted him dead. And in Octopus's head, the concept of war was beginning to evolve. He remembered that, although men destroyed with their hands, they could also make. So Octopus learned how to write. In his own ink, he called for a united ocean, a sea of cooperation, democracy. He wanted the deep to fight back against the nets and the ships, the way of reason over greed. It would take a long time, but now Octopus had a purpose. There was a whole ocean out there to teach how to read.